VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Hey folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Welcome to The Times. To find out more, head to thetimes.co.uk.
Every goal, every game, everywhere. The Times and the Sunday Times, now with goals.
Hello and welcome to The Game, the one and only football podcast from The Times. I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and in the studio this week, we have a full house. I am delighted to be joined by Rory K. Smith, who's back from a stag do, Alison Rudd, who's doing something with her hands, and making his return after a long period, it's Tony Cascarino wearing a checked shirt. And he only has two buttons unbuttoned, which is good. He might move to three in a minute, but that might get me a little excited. Coming up, we'll be talking 10 years of Glazers at Manchester United. We'll also be going over the main talking points of the weekend, but we're going to start, yet again, at Stamford Bridge.
Well, the Chelsea fans will never tire of recalling Steven Gerrard's match against them last year. And he leaves the field here to rapturous applause, not just from the Liverpool fans, but from Jose Mourinho and some of the Chelsea supporters as well.
So the interesting bit is the relegation, not the stuff at the top, but we kind of need to rattle through this quickly. So Chelsea and Liverpool draw 1-1. No big reaction there. For me, the biggest points were Andre Mariner, who we'll get to in a minute. Cass, you had something to say about the reaction to Steven Gerrard.
Yeah, I found it strange because Steven, sometimes as players you get a little bitter and twisted where you get fans chanting at you. And I was thinking, well, Stevie, you should come on air and you should actually just turn around and go, do you know what? I've taken a bit of stick. And be a bit humble about it. I found he took it too personally. Why did he get so affected by, you know, what happened to him at Anfield with Demba Ba? Yeah, that happens. There was a chant about you and Chelsea fans do it. It wasn't a vile chant.
Was he worked up about it? Or is it just nice of them to show up, throw away con?
Well, he meant the reception afterwards that he got from the Chelsea fans when he left the pitch meant absolutely nothing. Chelsea fans adore Steven Gerrard. They think he's an incredible player, like most of us in football, or everybody in football. You should do. He's been brilliant for the last, 10, 15 years. When you're a big player like that, sometimes fans will chant at you. And when you're at the very biggest and a mistake happened, you get stuff coming at you. I thought Steven took it just too personally.
But sometimes you lash out at people you're not really lashing at. You're lashing out at.
Yeah, I totally understand.
So they're a surrogate for Brendan Rodgers, who used to work at Chelsea, and perhaps Rafa Benitez, who also used to work at Chelsea. Is this what you're saying, Alison?
No, I'm saying he's not happy. He's not happy at the way he's leaving Liverpool. And he's not in a good place. I don't think he was happy to be substituted.
Say that, Alison. Why can't he say that? Is it we're going to have to wait for the book?
I'm not saying he's unhappy with the club. I think he loves Liverpool, and that is why he never left to join Mourinho at the various clubs Mourinho asked him to go to. But in a microcosm, just he was the most effective Liverpool player on the pitch. Not in terms of the passing and the prettiness, but he was the one that was going to get a goal and did get a goal. Why you haul him off at that point? I don't know. He didn't look happy about it. This has been happening the whole time since he announced he was leaving.
But he had to bring in Lucas so that they could win the game.
Well, you just explain why it's stupid. So, and then he is asked afterwards, what did you think of the reception? And if you're not happy, you're going to be sarcastic.
I was a bit surprised that he, because I thought first and foremost, to give him that ovation was really nice of Stamford Bridge. That was a really nice thing for Stamford Bridge to do. It was a moment of class, and that Chelsea's fans should be applauded for that. Come on, Gab. Gab's phone has... Gab has got a WhatsApp from Cuauhtemoc Blanco. Stamford Bridge deserve huge amounts of credit for doing it. I know what Cass means. Like, I was surprised he didn't just say it was really nice, very touching, and move on. And but you know, he should have said it was really nice, very touching. But all that matters to me, obviously, is the applause of the Liverpool fans. Fine, leave it there. It wasn't just one game. Chelsea fans have abused Steven Gerrard, and I agree with you, not in a particularly vile way, but they have abused him consistently for the last 10 years, if not longer. Most of their songbook centres on Steven Gerrard, so I think they're the real losers.
No, that's not true, actually. No, most of their songbook centres on Tottenham.
Do you know what?
Gary Neville.
I'm going to work on a survey, which will find, in the manner of all bias surveys, that London clubs sing more about other teams than any clubs in the country, and I find it really weird. Arsenal at Hull last week, I was up the whole game, sang constantly about Tottenham. Shut up, sing about your own team. It's baffling.
It's called a rivalry.
But it doesn't happen in Manchester. You don't hear Man United.
United have no rivals because they're the biggest thing, best club in the world. Nobody can come close to them.
We'll get onto that anyway. I would say that Chelsea fans have sung about Steven Gerrard a lot for the last 10 years. I think it's actually okay for Steven Gerrard to be a little bit pissed off about that because it has gone on quite a long time.
I wanted to bring this up, the Guard of Honour thing. I hadn't really thought about it, but I was talking to former Liverpool legend and former Player of the Year, Steve Nicol, who thinks the Guard of Honour thing is ridiculous. And I know this is kind of a slightly newfangled thing. He just thinks it's just stupid and forced. And it got me thinking, like, yeah, it kind of really is. Anybody have a problem with this? Just me?
Not really, no.
Did you ever get a Guard of Honour?
No.
No, but you never won anything,
did I care? No. Do I think it's...
Would you have done it to another team?
Necessary? No. Well, if we were told to do it, that's basically the truth of it.
But would
I'm
you,
sure there's lots of players who don't want to do a Guard
of
Honour.
Would you have been happy to do it?
Well, you have to have a respect for someone who's won the league, don't you? You have to respect them. So, yeah, I would have done it.
Like most things, if you're told to do it, it kind of loses a bit of a bit of meaning. This Andre Mariner thing, I don't want to keep picking on referees, but if anybody watched Match of the Day, too, last night, that whole sequence I thought was just absolutely mind-boggling. He doesn't see Cesc tackle, or maybe he sees it and he judges it differently. Fine, normal speed, maybe it's difficult. The ball goes to the other end of the pitch. And then he comes back, and first he shows a red card to John Obi Mikel, but fine, maybe he pulled out the wrong card. But then he shows Obi Mikel a yellow card, and then he's like, oh, no, dude, sorry, no. And then he goes and he books Cesc.
I think he probably thought Fabregas got the ball, because I thought he got the ball. First view.
All right.
No, third view, didn't look like that. But first view, looked like he got the ball.
And, honest mistake, fine.
So play carries on. He doesn't even signal for play to carry on. He's not going to come back to the incident.
Right.
He thinks it's a perfectly fine tackle.
Mm-hmm.
And then the ball goes out of play because Mignolet kicks it out, does he?
Okay, whatever. And then it goes back.
And then he's hearing in his earpiece from I don't know which official, whether it's an assistant referee or a fourth official.
Those are the only people in his ear, right?
But I don't know which.
It's not like Scudamore's in his ear.
And they're saying, actually, that tackle was not fine. It was at the best reckless. You need to book him. And he's thinking, who's him? And he. That is a slightly odd bit.
Surely you just assume that if a foul has been committed by a Chelsea player, it's probably John Obi Mikel. I think that's fair.
This guy has one job, right? I don't mind if you're concentrated and you make a mistake, if you're doing your best and you make a mistake. In other words, you think you don't see the how serious Cesc tackle is.
But you wipe it from your brain. You can't memorize every instant in the game. So if you're going to be a good referee, that tackle happens and you forget about it because in your head it's not an instant you're going to come back.
What
to.
Is he a so goldfish? You can't keep a thought in his head more than 10 seconds.
You don't make a mental note of every single action.
Oh, really?
That you committed it. You
oh,
can't.
Really?
You've
okay.
got to
oh,
then
right.
try and really focus on the next.
So then nobody ever gets booked for persistent fouling because you don't remember
stuff. Exactly. That's the point. You do remember the fouls. You remember the things that are not correct. You don't remember all the good stuff. I've spoken to referees
That was
about
a good
this.
Tackle from Cesc, we didn't remember
Their one regret is that after a really brilliant game of football, they don't sort of remember enough of it or feel part of it because they're not focusing on the nice things or the non-illegal things.
I think the guy, his mind just started to wander. Maybe he was thinking about the summer and he stopped paying attention. And when they said, like, oh, look, it's a foul, and, you know, memo to his assistant referees, given that he's half asleep half the time, maybe next time just don't just say, oh, that merits a yellow, but say, that merits a yellow, and it was Cesc Fabregas.
The assistant got it wrong and told him it was Mikel.
There was a lot of confusion.
I'm sorry. So you mistake the tall black man for the small white man who's wearing a freaking face mask. Yeah, exactly. You know what? Let's just move on. This is... I can appreciate mistakes. What I can't tolerate is when people make mistakes because they're not paying attention. And clearly people here, or they're miscommunicating. Even in your scenario, then, the people who are communicating with him are miscommunicating. He spends like 3 minutes talking to John Obi Mikel. Can't somebody say, hey, Andre, it's not him, it's the other guy.
This is another example where my plan to make footballers wear different coloured hats becomes extremely important. If they were all wearing different coloured hats, you'd just be like, yeah, it was Andre, it was the orange guy. It worked perfectly.
City flooding forward. It's a wonderful touch from Bonny for David Silva. Six of the best for Manchester City.
Moving on to Manchester City and Queen's Park Rangers. City go and pummel them 6-0. I'm very pleased for Alexander Kolarov, who has quietly had maybe his best month in since I remember him coming to England. What?
In a red letter day. Alexander Kolarov's best month. Brilliant.
Why do people laugh? The guy is an incredibly skillful player.
I love Kolarov.
If he were more athletic, if you could combine Clichy and Kolarov into one human being, if you could, like in The Fly, they put the two things and you put them together.
Yeah.
You would have a tremendous left back. A guy who can't run and can't pass.
Just in case you haven't seen The Fly, we will put a spoiler alert on the front of the podcast.
Yes, exactly. In case you hadn't seen this film, where the original is like from the 1940s. Okay. Queen's Park Rangers, it seemed it's all doom and gloom. I read somewhere that like they could be somehow end up in the conference, which I didn't fully understand. I guess it's not really because they wouldn't meet Football League's version of financial fair play. How did it get to this? I mean, I presume they thought there was a possibility they could get relegated and said, well, if it happens, we'll pay the fine, right? I mean,
no, the lawyers are counteracting it. So they basically are liable for a fine for what they did when they were last in the Football League. They have got a team of lawyers negotiating with the Football League to try and make a case to suggest they shouldn't have the fine that they are liable to be given. I don't think they help themselves by essentially pretending that their debts were 60 million pounds lower than they actually were. That's not helped them. That looks a little bit like you're trying to pretend that you haven't got into loads of debt. I don't think they'll get the fine. I don't think they'll end up in the conference. But it's still a club that needs a massive, massive rethink about the way it's run.
Was it just a case of just buying old veteran players? Just the amount of bile that was directed at these people, like they don't care. Like, did you ever go on the pitch? Did you ever play in a game where you felt like, oh, look, my teammates don't care. Guess what? I don't care either. I'm just going to go through the motions for 90 minutes and screw the fans who are paying money.
I did a piece, I think, about 2 years ago, and I remember chatting, I don't know if it was with Rory, but I think it was all along the lines of the financial aspects of the club and when they got promoted with Warnock and how they were going about it. I remember talking to Mark Bowen, who was with Mark Hughes when they took over, who was the most awful manager at the time, and now we're seeing what's happened at Stoke. And he said to me, Mark Bowen said to me, there's players here that you wouldn't even have heard of who are on big money. He said the list is endless. What was happening, they couldn't believe what the wages that people were on, how many of them were on in numbers, and they knew it would come at a huge cost, and they brought in players themselves, still paying big money. I just look at QPR and I think it's, like you say, overpaying, underachieving. I mean, Joey Barton's comments about too many bad eggs, I think there's a few players who might say that about you, Joey, who are in the team. And most of them, by the way, if he's talking about, weren't probably in the team at Man City yesterday. They lost 6-0 to. So it's a real strange...
Because the good eggs are Clint Hill and people like that, right?
It's Stoke City years and years ago had a team that were notorious. I remember reading a programme, going to the old Victoria game, and one of the guys, but one of the assistants was talking. He said, I've never worked with a group of players that were so bad, in his programme notes. And I remember reading it and thinking, oh my God, I can't believe what he said about all these players that were at Stoke City, that how bad it was for the club. And it sort of resembles, so it made me feel a QPR. The way it's panned out for QPR, the players they have, players that, you know, that have easily been problems for them off the field as well, is a lot wrong. Even the coach has to take huge responsibility in the way he set them up.
Yeah, you know what? All that's fine, but it just gets me that we can all look at a game and feel like people aren't putting in effort, right? We've all had that from the time we were fans. What gets me here is it seems like there's this huge faceless idea of the QPR player who's a bad egg. And then, other than Joey Barton, who frankly, I don't think has been a bad egg this season. And I think he's played well and put an effort from what I've seen. Nobody's naming names, right? It's all like, it's all a general malaise, but we're not going to go and do that, right?
No, whenever people talk about the bad eggs at QPR, and I think Joey's absolutely right. The person that we are all picturing is Adel Terapt. But it's not that. That is not, it's not Terapt. It's not, the issue isn't Terapt. The issue is, as we've said, they spent loads of money on players who are there only for the money. There is a lack of, it's not that they don't on the pitch and they're not trying at all, like they're sort of just sort of, you know, they've not really got the proper kit on, and they, you know, they've forgotten their shin pads. It's the fact that they don't have that little extra 2 or 3% of intensity that you, when you really want to win, that's what they're clearly missing.
So you're saying you really think there's players who are there only for the money and not because they think, oh, if I go to this club and I do well, then I can move to a bigger club and there make more money and win more caps.
There
and
are far too many players there who have gone to QPR for not quite for the right reasons.
I don't know. I think this is an easy shortcut. I
mean, no, it's not. Gab, it's not. It's come from speaking to people who are at the club.
The problem is, I don't know how sharp these people are when they were the people who brought them in, and then they go and they dump it on these guys.
There is without question a problem at the top of the club that you have to. And I like QPR. I know a lot of people there, and they're a good club to deal with. I'm sure Alison would say the same. That they're nice people to deal with. But the problem is, they've sacked so many people. And surely, at some point, if you keep on sacking people, you have to look at the person who's appointing the people.
No, I agree with you. Morale is low, and so on. But from there to saying to just throwing this mercenary tag around, I don't know. I mean,
he had nothing to do with yesterday. But Gibril Sissé was a major problem when 2 years ago, at the football club, the way he was carrying on. But there was a number of them at the football club. It wasn't group. And Joey, yesterday I'm watching the game. I'm going, how one paced the team is. The manager selected the team. He couldn't have picked a slower team if he'd have tried. You know, I'm looking at it and thinking, you're playing three at the back. You've got a 36-year-old in Clint Hill and a 35 in Richard Dunn up against Aguero, and they've got to go run the channels. You know, and I'm thinking, it made them look even 10 times worse. I'm watching the game thinking, this is like Bayern Munich's first 15 minutes of Barca. But the manager didn't even change it. You've got Zamora's not quick. Joey's not quick. Clint Hill's not quick.
So all these guys you've mentioned are basically English players. So the problem is too many English players in the team. Well, you should go and sign more foreigners,
I think it's a real deep problem that's been embedded in QPR for a couple of years. And then there's been lots of players
would
who have totally
Chris
gone
Ramsey?
There for the money.
If you're Tony Fernandez, would you sack Chris Ramsey?
I wouldn't employ him as the first-team coach. No, I've seen enough evidence. Okay. I watched them at Aston Villa. They could have lost six at Aston Villa.
I don't think the players are convinced. I think they like Ramsey. As a bloke, I think they think he's a decent coach. I don't think the players think he's a manager.
I
wouldn't expect many
Ramsey's
players to be there next
year. He's been picking the team mostly on the basis of who he thinks deserves to be there because they're decent people and are listening to him in training. That isn't how you pick a team. That isn't how you pick a team.
QPR will lose, or will see, 15, 20 players leave this summer.
All right. Speaking of disasters, Bayern Munich's first leg at Barcelona was a disaster. Pep Guardiola got a lot of stick. And then the story emerges on Saturday. I'm going to let you in on something. Some people absolutely make stuff up when they talk about transfers. But generally, they don't. Generally, what happens is somebody tells you something, and maybe it's a great story, so maybe you don't always triple check it, and you roll with it. So Beansport Arabic reports that Pep Guardiola has reached a deal to join Manchester City at the end of the season. Richard Keys goes and says that he backs the story, which you can say Richard Keys works for beIN Sport, whatever, but he still has a rep that he's putting on the line when he goes and says this. And then Didi Hamann, weirdly, who does not work for beIN Sport, as I understand it, but doesn't really like Pep, goes out on German television and says that Pep's been talking to Manchester City and they have a verbal agreement and so on. Bayern deny this. They're extremely angry. Pep Guardiola denies it. He issued a statement on Monday, you know, vehemently saying he's definitely not going to City. And City, of course, deny it as well. Anybody see a weird conspiracy here? Anybody have any theories about what might be afoot?
Do you think that Gab might have a theory?
I'm hoping you sages could explain it to me.
Well, only one I could think is Didi Hamann knows, obviously, somebody very high up in Bayern that he's personally close to that. What other reason would he say it? Just in spite? If he doesn't like him, why would you make a story up if you know it's going to never be
found
out?
You say Bayern or City? He did play for City.
Yeah, but more so Bayern. They're the club that have got him. So they're the club. He wouldn't have to know they were prepared to leave.
But the problem with that is that why would Bayern go and say, like, before a Champions League return, like, semi-final, oh, look, this manager's going to walk out.
Well, that's a poor clearance. And Ings! Chink of light. If Burnley are going down, they are going down fighting. and they could well take Hull City with them.
Relegation battles obviously been a tremendous talking point. Some of us predicted that Leicester, thanks to their king power, were going to stay up, and we've been vindicated. Well, almost. Hull City, though, is a team some of us, i.e. me, predicted would go down. They lost at home to Burnley. That I did not predict. I thought they could get something out of this game. Anyway, sadly, it means Burnley are being relegated. Sadly or not sadly, I guess it depends whether you like Sean Dyche and the underdog tale. What I'm curious, though, is if you throw it forward, Alison, what happens next to Burnley? Because they can go and maybe get promoted again, but if they come back with the same resources, then they'll just go down again, right?
I mean, well, they were conservative in their approach to being in the Premier League. Too conservative, probably. You sort of get the impression just a bit of splashing of the cash might have been just enough to keep them up. Sometimes a small risk can reap quite large rewards. They'll get parachute payments. They'll keep hold of quite a large number of their players. It's only Danny Ings, really, that people are talking about at the moment as potentially leaving. I don't know if Sean Dyche will stay. I think a lot of clubs will want that kind of manager, who hasn't moaned once throughout the whole season about the underinvestment. He's just said, this is what I have and this is what I'm going to work with. So they'll probably have a new manager, similar squad, parachute payment.
Cass, is Sean Dyche a good manager? Would you have him at your club?
Following on from what Alison said, which is true, you know, he's just handled everything that's been thrown at him.
He's been good, but I'm saying is I'm trying to throw it forward, right?
I think there's a lot of clubs that would be interested in the way he's gone about his
business. But should they be interested?
I think he's shown a lot. I don't think I've ever seen all season Burnley been beat up in any particular game where
really,
you've gone 5-0, 4-0, look a complete shambles. No, I haven't seen that. Seen him lose a few edgy games. I think one thing he got slightly wrong, I think he used Danny Ings. I'm pretty sure he hasn't made one substitute, you know, been put on the bench and been rested. Like,
he plays the same people all the time.
Yeah, I think slightly I would have liked to have seen Danny Ings being given a break at a time, because I thought there was a period probably a month ago where Danny had slightly lost his edge. They had Vokes come back from injury, which he tried to use in a partnership. He did it against Man City. They beat them. I think he'd done a lot right. And, hey, with a budget as small as they had, I think even being, you know, what, second from bottom today, I can't see that Sean wouldn't be appealed to many clubs, you know, between mid-table and below.
Yeah, it depends what comes up, doesn't it, to an extent. Sunderland would be up. That'd be one he could get, you'd have thought.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on. Settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books. Contacts. Calendar. Double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
West Ham, possibly. Those sorts of clubs, I think he's a good fit. Deserves a chance. Doesn't play particularly pretty football, Dyche, but he's
effective. He used the boy Trippier really well, yeah, you know, whipping in balls. And you know, I think he got a lot right. I mean, the boy done well for them. He took him from Old City. There's lots of players I thought have done really well for him this year.
They
just
want
a big enough squad, and he really kept it. Too many of them were guaranteed. Like you said, they're using too many players week in, week out of the course of the season.
But like Alison says, you just wonder whether, like, £3 million signing in January would
that
have been
enough? What did you pay for the boy from Middlesbrough?
Djurcevic.
Yeah, what did you pay for him?
1.8 or something.
And he sort of didn't really play a part this year, did he?
I think I'm right in saying he got Chalobah as well, and then he never played him. Right, which I thought was kind of weird and unusual as well. That's something that would set off alarm bells to me, because I appreciate the benefits of chemistry and team spirit, but Chalobah is a better player than every single person in a Burnley shirt, with the possible exception of Trippier and some people like Ings. I know you do. When you can't integrate people into your side, that's the one thing that would make me a little bit uneasy. I thought Keane from United was a good signing too, but then I guess he got injured, so we never saw him. I've been told he makes it a point, says he only wants English-speaking players. I mean, if he goes to Sunderland, and you know, there's half the people there who are like, hey, ¿qué pasa, Sean? You know, and like, he's going to be like, okay, guys, what do you do with him? You know, I think if he does move on, he's going to have to add that dimension to his skill set, because it's just untenable, I think, in the modern...
You're limiting your market, aren't you? You're limiting your economy, and that doesn't work.
The one man who does not limit his market or his economy is Steve Bruce, who will sign players from just about everywhere. I think he's got four continents or five continents represented.
And he's written two novels. Saucy novel.
They're a bit unlucky in this one. They're another one that if they go down, people are going to blame the owner. The financial situation isn't great. They're your near neighbours, aren't they, Rory?
Hull would like to think it's part of Yorkshire, yes.
Yeah. It's,
the rest of us aren't quite sure.
A suburb of Leeds, I think.
It is not a suburb of Leeds.
Is the
country just one giant homogenous mass to gab? If it's not in sort of West London, he's not interested.
No, I can make distinctions. I know there's Yorkshire, there's Merseyside, there's the Midlands, and
what's the bit in between Yorkshire and Merseyside? What do we call that?
Oh, Manchester, Lancashire.
Lancashire, there you go.
Yeah, Greater Manchester, but it's all like a giant sort of urban agglomeration, right?
Not all
Burnley
of it, no.
And Preston there's Blackburn.
There's industrial Lancashire, South Lancashire, and there's the more rural North Lancashire.
Does anybody? I guess nobody here is pretty concerned about Hull, or nobody cares.
So I think there is something. I think Hull's a bit weird because Alan will get a lot of the blame. Although it's not like he's not invested in the team. They spent quite a lot of money, Hull.
Yes, yeah. Steve Bruce has, and maybe that's
what you know. What I feel quite weird about how it's all panned out is he just recently signed a new 3-year deal.
Yeah, no, yeah.
And the way it's sort of.
Why would you ever give Steve Bruce a 3-year deal? Why would you give any manager, if you're a club that size, why would you give any manager a 3-year deal?
If you talk so nicely about the chairman and you're so good to him and in many ways, and when he wanted to change the name of the whole Tigers and you're always on the side of the chairman really likes you.
I'm not against Steve Bruce. I think he's done.
He's a nice man.
He's a nice man.
Yeah,
he's
I'm with Michelin. I know him really
but
well.
But what I'm saying is there's an imbalance here. There's many more managers than there are football clubs, and you as an owner, if you give if you're the owner of a club that's threatened with relegation, if you give a manager like Steve Bruce a 3-year deal, you are an idiot. Okay? It's an idiotic move because you will expose yourself to all sorts of liabilities if things don't pan out, possibly for reasons without Steve Bruce's control. You have the power as an owner of a football club, and it just blows my mind. We're not talking about Mourinho or Pep Guardiola here, who you think brings all this added value. He is a manager.
Yeah, but he kept being linked to Fulham. They just had to keep him somehow.
If you'd offered the guy 1 year, he would have taken it.
Yeah. If it's Hull, Burnley and QPR that go down, could you get 11 players out of those teams that you'd want in a like ninth place Premier League team? 11 in total. I don't think you could. That's the problem. Each of them have got two or three decent players. Andy Robertson at Hull's a good player. Diame's all right once every 3 weeks.
Ndoi?
Yeah, Ndoi's all right. He's okay.
Trippier
you take.
Shackle?
Next.
You don't like Shackle?
Shackle's okay.
One thing that
Bobby
stood
Zamora?
Out for me
get your goals.
for Hull City was the strikers, the way that he had the Jelovic long period that looked like really good, then he sells long and then he changes it around. I think he's really messed around with his strikers.
We're joined now by Matt Dickinson, wrote an excellent exclusive on the 10 years of the Glazers at Manchester United. And this was followed on Monday by James Ducker's piece, which sort of...
It
was Friday and Saturday.
Friday and Saturday, there you go. So, Dicko, 10 years on from Glazer, what I sort of gathered is that the initial green and gold protests, they went away. The hardcore United fans who felt strongly enough left and formed their own club, FC United, who are doing fairly well. And the rest kind of accept the fact that this is it and that maybe the sky hasn't fallen. Is that about right?
Well, that's one summation. I mean, I think that the Glazers have won. I mean, if their victory, which is certainly you could imagine from their perspective, is to be seen as a victory of success in business, success in making money, they've won spectacularly, haven't they? The club's doubled in value. And what was interesting, just retracing how they bought the club, was how many hurdles they had to get through. You know, there was the opposition of the PLC board at the time. There was obviously violent opposition from supporters. There was pretty much no one up for it. Even the banks and the financiers had grave doubts, especially when there was a sort of independent report commissioned from Deloitte to look at the Glazers' forecasts. And they said, look, these don't add up. You know, they're saying commercial growth is going to soar. we don't believe it. They say broadcast revenue is going to leap up. You know, we think they're being unrealistic. And so, you know, there was plenty for them to overcome. And, you know, speaking to a few people, they said how immensely sort of stubborn they were. And clearly they, you know, they have to be given some credit for foresight. Equally, you know, there are plenty of sides to this, obviously, as the fact that they can't even walk into Old Trafford without security guards does tell you another story.
You write in your piece that they took something like £700 million out of the club. I'm assuming you arrived at that in terms of the debt plus the fees and...
Fees, repayment, loan, obviously most of that's loan repayments.
Just looking at this, you might then conclude that, all right, that's £700 million. You know, it's great. United are a massive, massive club, but really in the 10 years of Glazer, they've won one Champions League final on penalties. I think they won, is it five titles and no FA Cups? Maybe that $700 million could have been used to buy better players than the ones that they have.
Well, absolutely, and you know, it has strained all our it strained credibility, it strained all our beliefs that when Alex Ferguson, and he said this privately, publicly, said that he was never denied a player that he wanted. If, you know, if he went after a Wesley Sneijder, the reason that deal did not happen was because Sneijder was asking for money they thought was unreasonable. You speak to David Gill, on or off the record, he will say the same, that, you know, when these deals fell down, it was because the club, including, you know, the existing management, decided that it was getting ridiculous. Now, you know, fans obviously are going to come back and say, well, you know, we don't care how ridiculous it was. That $700 million should have gone on the team, and it's impossible to argue against that. I mean, I make the point in the piece. I mean, there's no small irony in the fact that UEFA has spent so long sort of working out legislation to stop people throwing money at football, but you know, there's nothing to stop someone taking money out of the game, as the Glazers have done. Speak to Ferguson, and you can say, well, he's been very well paid, still being very well paid, a seven-figure salary to be nice to the Glazers, but... again, it's just one of the contradictions in their reign is that you can't get anyone apart from the fans to criticise them. And there's no doubt in the last 5 years that, you know, the squad was allowed to become a bit depleted. You know, clearly there was, you know, a lack of reinvestment in the squad. But at the same time, you know, over their tenure, is it three Champions League finals over their tenure, which is the most successful period in Man United's history, certainly in that competition.
The 10 years before that were better in terms of silverware.
Should we tot it up? Yeah, you may well be right. Again, I was just checking back through. Ferguson much preferred dealing with the Glazer model of ownership, not saying necessarily the Glazer in particular, than a PLC board. When it was a PLC board, he found it cumbersome. He found that signings would have to go through, you know, committees, and that there was a lot more need for discussion around the place, and the PLC model is a difficult one in which to operate.
Is there a case, Matt, of that the fans were exaggerating the worry of debt, thinking that their club could be, you know, like some of the smaller clubs that we see going into administration? Was there that thought that was deep embedded into the fans?
I don't think it's exaggerated. I mean, I think the fear was certainly well placed, given that, you know, even the board at the time were, I mean, that their resistance was because they thought the takeover was sort of too aggressive and was based on too much debt. I mean, there's no doubt about it. What they didn't, I guess, foresee, I mean, none of us clearly foresaw, or I'm sure there's a lot of people who, you know, could maybe have raised the money to buy Man United at the time. They must have wished they could have seen how, you know, how the turnover could grow. What's it now, almost about $450 million a year turnover at Manchester United? I think it's only Real Madrid that are higher. So, you know, their worry was, you know, unfounded. It wasn't misplaced, but the Glazers have responded, you know, to that worry. And the fact is the debt's pretty manageable now, and the interest rates are not negligible, but certainly for a club of the size of Manchester United are pretty low.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because you kind of look at it on one level and think, right, well, that 700, 800 million quid they've taken out of the club is obviously bad. They could have spent that on players. At the same time, they wouldn't have had anywhere near the revenue streams. So is it not a case of, instead of saying the Glazers were good or bad for Man United, is it not somewhere in the middle? They've grown Man United in a way that United might have grown, but might not have. It's kind of like a zero something. They've kind of, the good and the bad outweigh each other.
I think that's right. I mean, I think, you know, exactly. I mean, I guess that's, we don't tend to like pieces that come to a conclusion of somewhere in the middle. But we like, you know, much more fun debating one extreme or the other. And let's say, I don't think anyone could sit here and say the Glazer model is great for football, leverage buyouts. No way. But you're right. I think, you know, I think it does have to come somewhere in the middle. I mean, the fact is, again, just was tracing it through the commercial staff. When they took over, someone was saying, you know, it was sort of 1.5 people and they were dealing with existing sponsors most of the time. They've now got a sales team of over 100. Now, this, you know, this isn't, we didn't go into football to talk about marketing sales teams or, you know, crisp deals in Singapore. But, you know, it is what makes the business tick over. And they invested in staff. They invested in, you know, offices in London, Hong Kong, and other places to make money. Principally, obviously, to make money for themselves. But the fact is, to make money for themselves, they have to have a club that enjoys some success.
If you compare the way they've treated marketing and the income streams, it's incredibly impressive. But if you compare it to even clubs that have a great tradition and ought to be reaching out and having fans all over the world, the other clubs are pathetic. I remember interviewing Jim Pilotta, who owns Roma. He comes from a financial background.
I love
Jim Pilotta. But he's got a model to help clubs just with the very basics of how to distribute the scarf you buy over the internet. Clubs don't know how to do that. Clubs don't know how to reach out to people who've bought a season ticket, even to ask if they want to buy something else as well. The level of And in other businesses, that sort of marketing is taken for granted. Football has been incredibly backward.
Yeah,
so you have to give credit to the
Liverpool.
They're a very backward-looking marketing.
Well, Liverpool have run themselves like a corner shop compared to United, and you know, we can see the trajectory that they're trying to recover from. I mean, my worry is one other sort of, which isn't necessarily the Glazers in particular, but it, you know, I think it's has to be part of the debate, is whether if you're being run like this, and principally as a business, in this Champions League era, you know, your worry is that it's possible just to sort of tick over, and Arsenal can be brought into this argument as well, of whether it does just make, you know, Champions League qualification acceptable, and you tick over qualifying in the top four, staying in the top four, making decent revenue, and not striving to win the Champions League. You know, you're happy to be involved, you're happy maybe to get the quarterfinals, maybe the semi-finals on the good run, but you're not straining, striving to be winning stuff in the same way, because you're being run as a business that's ticking over. And I think that's certainly, say, we've seen it in Arsenal to some degree, haven't we? That we think that they settle for ticking over successfully as a business rather than straining for top trophies.
Time now for some quick hits. Sunderland smash and grab against Everton. First, Danny Graham, who hadn't scored in 28 months, deflects Jordi Gomez's shot past Tim Howard. And then Jermaine Defoe, might have given away a penalty, then deflects another shot in the back of the net, possibly with his hand. Alison, is Dick Advocaat a genius or just really, 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 really lucky?
Yeah, let's add another really to that lucky. Everton dominated more than any team over the weekend. Okay, they should have been more ruthless in their finishing. Ridiculous result, really. And I love the way the commentator, I think, said that Danny Graham was embarrassed to score. No, he wasn't. He was kissing his badge and pointing to the heavens and going to the crowd, and because they knew how lucky they'd been.
Leicester City went again, proving that they really do have king power. They beat Southampton 2-0. Rory, as great escapes go, where does this rank? And is there any broader message or consideration to make about Nigel Pearson?
Well, he's proved that he's a good manager, that he's more than just strangling on the touchline and weird quotes. He's really, really galvanised that team. He deserves huge credit for that. I think it is a great escape, because they were, as Matthew Syed writes beautifully in today's newspaper, they were basically banjaxed, weren't they? And
they were what?
Banjaxed. They were basically banjaxed, and he has got them out of it. I think it won't be remembered as a great escape, because they will finish so far clear of relegation that in years to come, when we think about the great escapes, we won't mention Leicester.
They were not, because I predicted that they were going to stay up, because their football was too good to go down.
Did you predict they would stay up on April the 7th? When they were still, they'd won two in 24.
Might have been the second week in April that I predicted it. Yes, it was on this very podcast. Yeah. Tom Cleverley scores for Villa against West Ham, and now they're pretty much staying up. Cass, have you been impressed? Should he stay at Villa or try to go and impress Louis van Gaal?
Well, it's impressed me the way that Tim Sherwood's got him doing. Look, when he was a kid at Man United, he was a number 10. He went to Watford, he scored goals. He's never played 52.
Did he go to Wigan?
Wigan as well, but didn't score as many goals as he did at Watford. He played as a number 10 at Watford. And then,
where was this in some? Oh, it's in the lower division somewhere, right? Okay, so that's why I wouldn't have any idea about this ever happening.
So he's not played 50 appearances for any of the clubs he's been at. And he's still, you know, he's what, 24, Tom? He's always got to get back to the number 10 role. And I think Tim's used him to get him closer forwards. And he's one of a number of players that actually have improved under Sherwood. And Tom looks like he's an accomplished lad. He can do lots of different things. Just the player I've seen the last couple of years has been on the fringes again. He's a number 10, staying there.
So should he stay at Villa or should he try to go back to United?
Stay at Villa.
Now don't be ambitious, young Tom. Stay at Villa. Alison, you're our playoff guru. Middlesbrough win at Brentford, Ipswich and Norwich draw. Any better sense of who's coming up?
Well, I mean, the bookies will say it's going to be a Middlesbrough-Norwich final. That seems obvious because they've both got second legs at home. But I'm going to stick with Brentford because they were unlucky on Friday night. And crucially, Andre Gray, he just needs to get shooting boots on. And I really think the Brentford defence is one to look at. They're quite good. I think they're going to do something amazing.
Tarkowski and co, see? I know some championship players, one championship player. Newcastle get a point, which is good, but maybe not so good because their direct rivals all won, except for Hull. Rory, are you feeling more confident that they'll stay up now?
I think they're more likely to stay up more because of Hull's last two fixtures being Spurs away, Manchester United at home. Although, having said that, Spurs have been on holiday and really are trying not to get in the Europa League. And United, as Cass is about to say, will already be in the Champions League. So they won't necessarily have the most to play for. Newcastle, I think they probably will just stay up, but they really don't deserve to.
United get a win over Palace and now fourth place is all but a formality. Cass, will you give a grade to Louis van Gaal's season, please?
Six. I think it's been a lot of bad.
It's not great.
No, I've already said it great. What do you mean
grade
great?
A, B, C, D.
Oh, sorry. I thought you meant out of 10. Just like, right, okay. Oh, sorry. Oh, right.
Well, B. Six is a B.
Yeah. Well, we could have said that, couldn't
no,
we?
No,
really?
Six.
What did I give him? A grade B minus. A lot of different stuff. Bought Di Maria. Fouled miserably for me.
Falcao.
Paid Rooney really in different positions.
Rojo.
Yeah, lots of indifferent stuff, but there's something. I mean, I can't remember the last time a manager had a whole year to get it so right for next season, and it doesn't feel like he's under any pressure. The objective apparently was fourth place or top four, and that's what he's achieved. But it's been a real strange season for them.
Shoot for the stars.
Gab, one for you. Barcelona took a huge step towards the title this past weekend, did not they?
Indeed, they did not do that. No, they did, actually. Because, of course, they won, and Real Madrid were held at home 2-2 by beautifully coached Valencia, by his very clever Scottish assistant coach you probably interviewed once.
Largely Ian Cathro's work, yeah.
Ian Cathro? What? What's his name?
Cathro.
Cathro, there you go. It was an incredible game, this 2-2 draw. Real Madrid hit the woodwork three times. They could have conceded five goals. Cristiano missed a penalty. But the upshot of this is that Barcelona, who won 2-0 against David Moyes' Real Sociedad, are now 4 points clear. There's two games to go. I think the title's pretty much theirs. And for Real Madrid, it's Champions League or bust. Right, that's all we got time for this week. If you haven't subscribed on iTunes and or Player FM for Android, please do so now. Many, many, many thanks to my guests today who made the long trip into London Bridge to join me. Alison Rudd, Rory K. Smith, and Tony Cascarino, I think, lives furthest away than everybody. Thank you so much, Tony. You can check out thetimes.co.uk on your digital device. And if you're a member, you're going to get exclusive football, rugby, and cricket highlights. Yes, you can watch highlights of Peter Moore's being sacked, or he is the name of the guy who got sacked, and all the cricket people got all incensed about that, right? Because they didn't actually tell him he was being sacked, but instead the
cricket people are not a race, Gab.
I think they are. They are. They're maybe not a race, but they're a community. They're a community of like-minded people. Anyway, you get all this free as part of your subscription, and if you're not a member yet, do not despair. You can take our £1 digital trial today. Tony Cascarino did that, and he has a huge smile on his face right now. And all he did was search Time Sport online to do so. See you same place, same time next week. Bye-bye.
Your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times now comes with access to every Barclays Premier League goal. Refresh your app, choose your team, accept notification, and you're away. We'll
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.